I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. I've had issues with pornography, alcohol, rage, depression, and panic. We're going through the 8 steps. We've kind of paired our, in the midst of small groups right now. We've already started. The groups are well underway. So we are going to tonight talk about step 2 in the 8 steps, not the 12 steps. Step 2 in the 8 steps consolidate 2 and 3 from the 12 steps, if that makes any sense. So here's how it could restore us to sanity. To me, the key word here, I don't have any notes tonight, by the way. So that's either a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know. The key word to me in this step, both in the 12 and the 8 steps, the way it's worded, believing that he could, that he could. And if we were taking a vote here, and in most any other place that has any inkling of a belief in God, if you ask the question, is there anything God can't do? Are his powers limited? Just nearly everybody would say, no, God can do, you know. The old saying is, can God make a rock too big that he can't pick it up? You ever hear that one? That was always chase that rabbit around a couple times. I don't know the answer to that. But usually there's little debate over what God can and can't do. Because kind of by definition, being God and being the creator and being who we say he is, then he's limitless in what he can do. The problem most of us have in this step too is, does he want to? It's not can he or can't he, it's does he want to? Does he even care enough? Are we on his radar? You know? If we're on his radar, why did all that bad stuff happen to us in days gone by? All of us have a story to tell. Every single one of us have a story to tell. We have been lied about. We have been abused. We have been stolen from. We have been disrespected, you know. We have been betrayed. We have been cheated on. We have been, the list can go on and on and on. Where was God then? Where was God when all those things were happening? And where is God now? I mean, it really goes to this. Where is God now when all the bad things are happening to all the innocent people of the world? Why do we have such extreme poverty and starvation? God doesn't care about those people? Well, the little children who die of cancer? How can we say a good God allows bad things to happen to innocent people? How can we do that? Because it comes down to this step. You know, all of us good Christians can say God can do anything. And then we want to say, well, he will restore us to sanity. Well, there's a lot of things he wouldn't do or didn't do in the past that we're thinking, well, I'm just not so sure. And so we need to deal, before we plow into this step, we need to deal with this whole thing of God not doing what we think he ought to do. If all of us got honest, which when it comes to this, we don't want to get honest. We figure it's irreverent or it's illegal or it's the church police are going to arrest us or whatever, which thankfully we don't have any at this church. Some churches actually have people who would make you think of church police. We don't have them here. What was the question? I forget what it was. Anyway, most of us think at some point or another, if we're really, really double honest, that there are points in our life where we could have been a better God to us than he was. That we could have done his job better than he did it. Now, maybe not when smooth sailing's going on, and maybe not today. Maybe you're thinking, no, God's doing great at what he does, you know, and he's living up to his job description, and he's doing fine. But there are times in our life when we think, I could have done a better job at being God than he did. I could have figured that one out better. I could have stepped in and done something about that. So we have a problem sometimes in that, and let's just boil it down, okay? Let's just get real with this, because we've said this kind of thing before, but we don't want to take it the next step. we really want God, you're not going to want to hear this, but I think it's true. We really want God to hate the people we hate. We want God to be rude to the people we'd like to be rude to. We want God to heal the people we love, but we want to have God send the people we hate to hell. Let's just get real about this. I've really done some hard thinking this week, and I've thought, our problem with God at the base level is that God doesn't live up to our expectations of Him, what we'd like Him to do. We think that God, if He was a good God, would do this, this, and this. We have in our mind, we have this unwritten, or it may be written, job description, and face it, He's not living up to that job description a lot of the times. And I think where it really, really comes down to is, I mean, think of the person who has hurt you the worst in this life. Think of the one person who has hurt you worse than any other person in this life. And in our honesty, we have to say, I want God to get that person. I want that person maybe even to burn for eternity in hell. I mean, that's getting real honest, but some of us may, there's no way that we can allow for God to have grace on that person. We just can't do it. We just can't bring ourselves to do that. And so we look at our lives and we think, if God was so good and God was so merciful and God was so caring to us, all down through the years, when we thought it was appropriate, He should have dealt out justice on that person. He should have exposed that person for who they were. He should have shortchanged that person just like they shortchanged everybody else. He should have done that. And so now we come to this step and we think, we're supposed to trust that this God really wants to restore us to sanity. He's dropped the ball so many times. I mean, you better call my son. And it wasn't just for effect. A lot of things you read in the Bible, when they get too honest, you think, that was just for effect. Yeah. When Jesus argued with his dad in the garden, that was just for effect. That wasn't real. I don't do the things I don't want to do, I go ahead and do. I had people tell me that was just for effect. Paul said that just to try to get us to think he was cool like us, that he was sinner like the rest of us. Well, I think we need to get real and realize that what we read of the stories in Scripture were real. They're not just for effect. And so when David says, that guy across the hill is an evil, rotten person. He gets away with murder. He gets away with rape. He gets away with all kinds of injustice and cruelty. I think, you ought to cut his head off and feed it to the crows or whatever. He comes up with these terrible solutions that he says, do that to that person. And then on a good day, he wakes up and says, God, you're so good. The sky is beautiful. The mountains sing your majestic praises. And that's why they call them the spasms instead of the psalms. Because he's either way up or he's manic depressive, I think. But the Bible describes him as a man after God's own heart. And it wasn't because he was squeaky clean. He stole a guy's wife. He window peeped and stole a guy's wife while she was taking a shower and got her pregnant and then had her husband murdered on the front lines of a battle. And we think, there's no way. You know, if I was God, fill in the blank. If I was God, I would have, right? And yet David, when he was faced with the truth, said, it's me. I did it. You know, he melted and he got real and he, you know, got real and he got honest with God. And so we have a problem with this God who is so free to forgive on the one hand and so free to show grace on the one hand, but on the other hand, sits by and lets a guy steal another guy's wife and get her pregnant and then have the guy. God just sat by and let it happen. God would do what David did and then dealt with it later. So a lot of us, when we look at this second step, we say, okay, I believe God can restore me to sanity, but I don't know if he will. I don't know if he wants to. And it's because we kind of think back and we think, maybe I have sinned so bad. Or maybe the wounds that so-and-so inflicted on me were so deep. Or maybe, you know, because we say, in my way of thinking, God has dropped the ball in the past. God has not come through the way I wanted him to or thought he should. So why should I believe he's going to come through today with this when it comes to me in this crucial point? By the way, if you know anything about the steps, if you don't get step one right and step two right, don't work any of the other ones. Forget them. They're a joke. They don't mean anything. You first have to admit you're powerless. You can't manage your life. And the second thing is to say, I believe I have a higher power. I believe I have a God who can, and really it doesn't say it, but really wants to restore me to sanity. If you don't have that, you don't have any recovery. So here we are stuck at this pivotal point. Last week we're struggling with why is God so patient with everybody? He is, as he moves us along. And now we're at this place with, okay, I'm ready to admit I'm powerless. Do you even care? Do I matter to you? Do I show up on your radar? Because in the past, I don't think I did. It didn't feel like I did. You know? So here we are at this place where we have to make, you know, isn't it funny? We're the jury. I don't know who the judge is, but like it's God's on trial. He's sitting in the defendant's seat and he's on trial and we're trying to figure out, is this God, does he deserve to be trusted or not? Is he worthy of our trust? So for just a few minutes, I want to talk about this almost like it's in a courtroom, just almost like that, and which means we're going to have to think just the facts and just logically for just a few minutes. And I think we've done this in here a time or two, but I think that I think we need to go over it and over it till we finally get it. You have to go back to the very beginning, and it's going to be like, what does this have to do with step two? We'll bring it back around. I think you have to go back to the very beginning and ask yourself the question, why did God make us? Why did God ever create humans in the first place? And what I've come up with, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, what I've come up with is he wanted to have a loving relationship with us. It wasn't because he needed employees. It wasn't because he's bored. You know, I want some little playthings. It wasn't, you know, we can come up with all kinds of silly answers, but I really think that if the story of Scripture means anything, it lets us know that God wanted somebody he could love on and who could return that love, and they could have this free love relationship with each other. Now stop and think about this. If I'm going to make you love me, you have no choice. You have to love me. Is that love? I mean, by the very definition of love, it has to be because you choose to love. That's the only way it's really love. Otherwise, it's robotic or it's not love, you know. You're going through the motions, but there's no love there. So when God created us to have this love relationship, he had to give us a free will to love him, which means he also had to give us a free will to hate him. That's the only way it works. Do you have free will if you only have one choice? You know? Choice. The way you can have love. So, we chose to hate. And you say, it's so innocent just to pick a piece of fruit off the tree and eat it. That particular act may not have been hateful in the story, but look what happens in the very next generation. Look how quickly they got two kids. The earth is underpopulated, which I probably scientifically it wasn't, but in the story, it was underpopulated. Not many people around. It's not time to eliminate other humans when you're that short of humans. And yet one brother has a beef with another brother, and he says, my answer to this is, is to eliminate you, to murder you. So I've chosen to turn away from God. I've chosen to be my own God. And what do I get? One generation into the story, you get one brother murdering another brother. You choose hate, and this is what you get. God could have come in easily when Cain was about to kill Abel and says, no, we'll have none of this. I command you to love. You have no choice. He could have come in and interceded in that story and stopped it dead in its track. Poor was a choice of words. But he could have stopped it dead in its track. But he didn't. He let it play out because he says, I am not going to set up this love relationship only to disobey it two generations in. I'm not going to create gravity to defy it one generation in. You see what I'm saying? It's like God sets all of this up, and then as soon as he sees us making choices he doesn't like, he steps in and he says, oh, no, we can't have this. In order for it to work, he had to allow one brother to kill another. And so here we live in this world where people make Cain and Abel type choices all the time. And some of us have been victims of that. Some of us have been on the receiving end of that and wonder why in the world God didn't step in and do that. Well, it goes back to the beginning where God said, we have to open the door for that possibility. I'm not trying to get God off the hook. If you have a personal beef with God, this probably doesn't apply to you relationally. What I've said is logical and would kind of stand up in a courtroom. But you got to go home with this defendant. You know what I'm saying? You got to drive home alone in the car with this defendant. And you got to have a conversation with this defendant and say, I know that legally you just got off. I heard Wendell kind of give an explanation that kind of got you off the hook. But I don't feel like you're off the hook. I still hold you responsible for what happened to me. I still don't understand why you allowed that or what, you know. So to logically understand this only goes so far. There comes a time when we have to have a come to Jesus moment with Jesus, where we have to sit down with him and say, okay, I want to speak my mind to you. Is it okay for me to be dead honest? Is it okay? A lot of people who say, no, you don't do that. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay to have those in-your-face moments with Jesus where you get real, double real, triple, quadruple real with him, and you say what you need to that's on the heart, your heart of hearts. And that's my story anywhere. I'm not going to tell you what your story will look like. But in my story, when I did that, when I got real with God, he didn't slap me down. He didn't say something sarcastic. He didn't get condescending with me. All I felt was his embrace and saying, okay, finally, now we can work with this. We can work with this kind of honesty and go forward. And so not only did I logically understand why bad things happen to good people, but then I emotionally and relationally understood why God allowed some of the stuff I've been through to happen to me. I understood it. Just the other night, I sat in the B. Oliver room with a dear sister of mine, well, Shannon Stockstill, who used to play keys with us, you know. She didn't leave mad when she left Pathway. She just was called to another ministry. Everything is good. And we sat and had a long conversation, and I've been struggling with some things in my mind, and just in a five-minute conversation, she said some words to me that just brought healing. And you know, you can logically understand something, but that doesn't necessarily bring healing. You can figure it out, but you don't feel any different, even though you got it figured out. But she shared some words with me that were salve to my soul. And I thought, wow, you couldn't have said anything better. I could tell that she was just a conduit, that it was flowing through her, but it brought this healing. And it could be, I don't know where you are tonight. I don't know if you are logically messed up with bad things happening to good people, and you logically are trying to figure that out. Because some people do get stuck there logically, not necessarily emotionally, but logically. Or it could be that you have a personal beef against God, and you feel like you've got pretty good, solid ground to stand on. You know? Well, either way, you can think through it logically, but you can also know that you have somebody on the other side who is trying to mend this relationship, actively trying to mend this relationship. It's just not me longing for this conversation. Time is right. We're going to have a talk. Remember the story of Job? The whole time through, he's got all these people who are his friends giving him all this kind of advice, and none of it fits with him. None of it sticks. None of it helps. It's not doing him any good whatsoever. And he keeps saying all through the book of Job, it's just kind of scattered, if I could just talk to my Creator, if I could just have a conversation with God. These guys are a bunch of dummies. I want to talk to God. He's got the answer to this. And he stayed the course. Job stayed the course. He said, sorry, guys, I don't think I did anything terrible. I don't think this is God punishing me. Oh, you're arrogant. You're self-righteous. No, I don't think so. You know, I think I'm okay with God. I think I have a good, close relationship with God. Man, I wish he'd talk with me. Man, I wish he could tell me what's going on here. But he stuck to that. He stuck to, I've got a close relationship with God, instead of trying to, well, yeah, I probably did something really bad and I deserve this. He stuck with that. And then in the end of the story, God shows up and he talks to Job. Job gets a freaking conversation with the Creator. I mean, like a real one, not like most of us, but a real one where God blows his hair back, you know, and gets his attention. Wow. I mean, that's saying something there. But I think part of the lesson is that while we're trying so hard to reach this emotional, relational reconciliation with God, we think we're the only ones working on that. We think we're the only active agent working on that. But there's a God on the other side that's saying, you don't have a clue what I'm doing to get us to the place where we can have that talk, you know. So if you're stuck in your recovery, you're probably stuck on either point one, step one, which we talked about last week, where you're still keep grabbing the steering wheel. I'm powerless, but I'm not that powerless, you know. Give me that sucker. Let me steer this. You know, your toe keeps inching over there on the accelerator or whatever. You're wanting to have some sort of control. You're stuck there, or you're stuck on this one here, where you say, I need to talk to him about it. I got some things. Restore me to sanity. And so I think the word that I would leave us with tonight would not be, well, keep trying, you know, keep working on that. I think what I would say is, we used this example a long time ago. You're inside of a cave and it's caved in and you've got a tablespoon. And you're sitting there trying to dig away the rubble so you can find your way out to God. You don't hear anything but the clink, clink, clink of that little tablespoon working away on these boulders and these big rocks. What you don't know is on the other side, there are backhoes and front-end loaders and engineers and experts, all divinely employed, trying to move the rubble out of the way. You have a God who is working, trying to get to you as you pick away with your tablespoon. So I think the word tonight is to know that God, not only will God restore you to sanity, he's dying to. Well, he actually did. To restore us to sanity. This is the heart of God. This is where God's coming from. Is he's got out the heavy equipment and he's doing what he has to reach us. So if you're stuck on step two, you may stay stuck there for a while. You may, and that's okay. But if you're stuck there, just know that it's not just you and your tablespoon. You know, it's not that. There's all this going on the other side trying to get to you. And God knows how to run a backhoe. So, thank you.